Coming up next, This Week Computer Hardware, Mantle versus G-Sync, two new mini ITX cases, Google's 4K codec, new GPUs, what's coming up at CES, and more. It's all coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 248, recorded January 2nd, 2014. CES is coming. Welcome to Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware. I'm your host, Patrick Norton, joined as always by the inimitable, the ever so awesome, the benchmarking fool himself, E, and is not really happy about returning to CES 2014, Mr. Ryan Shrout. How are you, sir?
I'm doing okay. We were complaining about CES. I try not to do it as much as possible, but I don't know. I think this will be my 12th CES. Maybe the 13th. I don't really keep track anymore. But it's a long time. Been going out there for a long time. 5 days walking around convention halls and that kind of stuff will start to wear on you, to be sure. Yeah. So
5 days, at least at this point, I think. So for people who aren't familiar either, A, with Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, this is a show where we aim to bring you the most useful, most important, most exciting news in computer tech. We're mostly, we love GPUs, probably even more than CPUs. We love mobile devices, and we see a lot of exciting stuff at the Consumer Electronics Show, which is CES 2014. It's happening next week, and it's interesting in that at some level, it just starts to burn on you. And Ryan, we were talking about this earlier. You know, you don't want to whine because it's essentially a really fun gig.
Yep.
But it's also, there is no moisture in the air. You have people coming from like six continents. They bring every possible illness on the planet with them. Mm-hmm. And at some point, you know, if you're not sitting in Vegas laying in the sun and, you know, losing other people's money, the charm of Las Vegas tends to wear off if you spend the entire time in the LVCC, which is a lovely convention center. But any convention center, like Fish or Visitors, starts to stink after 3 days.
You can only hear the sound of slot machines for so long before... It's just, you know, there's that very distinctive smell of casino, plus the sound of casino, plus the atmosphere of casino. And, you know, it was charming at the beginning of my life in Vegas, but a lot of it goes away. It's still fun to visit when you're not doing work stuff. But, you know, the hope is still that we'll see some pretty cool stuff out there. And obviously you and I will both be reporting on it the whole week. So.
AMD, NVIDIA, Intel are all going to be there. Of course, Samsung, Sony, LG. And that's just like the first 18 hours, give or take. It's going to be, I feel like something's going to be big at this CES. I have absolutely no reason for basing that. Could be wearable technology. Well, no, but you know what I mean? Like there's incremental consumer electronics shows where it's like, hey, it's all the stuff we showed you last year, but a little bit better. Just enough, we hope, that you'll sell all your old stuff or throw it away. We don't care. Just buy more of the new stuff. But it's funny. We've got like NVIDIA and AMD with kind of competing standards for monitors. Of course, we're going to see GPU talk. Of course, the shadow of the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4 launches are over there. Intel seems to have walked away from their television initiative, but we expect them to have something interesting going on when they do their press conference on Monday because it's Intel. They spend a lot of money to be number one, and we hope they stay there. And we hope they keep reducing the prices on processors because, you know, we always want more processing power.
Sure.
But yeah, it's, 4K, you know, it seems to be like the year, if nothing else, you know, 2013 proved that you can kickstart almost anything if people believe it'll bring virtual reality and interactivity, to their computer or handheld devices. Anything you really ramped up to see? 3D printers, I think, are going to be everywhere at CES this year.
I would love to kind of see what innovations they have in that particular market. That's something that I'm really, really interested in, but have zero experience in so far. I want to see on the display side what is improved, right? So whether or not we see 4K monitors, like maybe 4K single connection, 60 hertz panels, you know, HDMI 2.0, preferably less expensive as well. And, you know, what we get from G-Sync, mm-hmm. you know, will we see G-Sync in higher resolutions, 2560 by 1440 or 4K? What's NVIDIA going to be able to do with its partners in time for January? You know, well, I guess we're in January now, in time for next week. So,
and will NVIDIA launch a strange and peculiar new portable gaming device to provide a market for their Tech 5 processors, which I'm quite sure will be Sunday night.
Well, yeah, okay. I mean, so last year they did Tegra 4 with the Shield. I don't know if they're going to do the same thing. That seems pretty quick to just, I don't know.
I think it's going to be a Tegra 5 medallion attached to a gigantic pair of ski goggles. That's what I'm predicting.
Okay.
I kid, but I'm going to be really afraid if something like that shows up. Steam holiday sale, is today the last day or is Saturday the last day for the Steam holiday sale?
I believe today is the last day. If you go to steampowered.com, I can tell you, you have 15 hours left. So until January the 3rd at like 10 a.m. Pacific, I guess is what that is. You'll be able to buy some games on sale. And if you're a PC gamer, like one of the primary benefits of being a PC gamer is being able to go to Steam during these sales. They have like four of them a year, and you can get awesome games like Bioshock Infinite for $10, Tomb Raider for $10. The new Batman Arkham Origins game is only $25. Even, you know, Saints Row 4 is $20. Call of Company of Heroes 2, $13.59. Skyrim is $7.50. You know, these are excellent, excellent games that really shine on the PC, and you can get them for like dirt cheap. Far Cry 3, $7.50. You know, something really unique and funny like the Stanley Parable is $9. And if you look around, there's, you know, you can look, they have like a sub $5 section, right? Where you can pick up Just Cause 2 for $2.99 or Garry's Mod for $2.50. And this is something that doesn't really happen on the console market. It has not up to this point. That you get these kind of regularly occurring Steam sales to the point where it may even become a detriment to some publishers and game developers, because I know a lot of gamers that are not heavy PC gamers, but, you know, kind of occasional ones. And they'll say, well, you know, I saw that Bioshock Infinite came out when on, you know, at launch period, but I'll just wait a couple of months and I'll get it on the next Steam sale. And sure enough, it shows up maybe longer than you might expect, but it does eventually show up too. So if you missed that was going on for the last 2 weeks or so, but it's still available as you listen to this. Right. Hurry up.
I'm laughing because I'm like, oh, got the GTX 760 last week or the week before, 2 weeks ago. When was the Steam OS release? It all bleeds together. I'm like, now I'm looking at this list and I'm like, oh yeah. Gotta do some shopping before tomorrow morning. EVGA Hadron Air Mini ITX case review. I just want to thank you for indulging my newfound fascination with Mini ITX cases by doing a bunch of reviews up in PC Per. This is kind of a new move for EVGA.
They've never done a case before, for sure. Like, everybody knows them as the graphics card company. They also, I think right after they kind of, the next thing they did was motherboards, and they kind of, when NVIDIA got into the chipset market very heavily, EVGA was one of the partners that launched kind of those NVIDIA reference style motherboards at first. And then EVGA has since gone on to kind of produce some of their own very high quality, always enthusiast targeted motherboards. They do power supplies now. They did a monitor several years ago, like a double-sided, like a flippable monitor. And it was kind of weird, but it was neat. So they're trying to diversify their portfolio some, to use that awkward terminology. And the Hadron Air is, you know, an example of that. So it's a mini ITX case. It's not a lay flat, like home theater style component device. It's more like a shrunk down PC case. Everything is still in the same position, more or less, but you're using a mini ITX motherboard. It comes with an included 500 watt, 80 plus gold, 1U style power supply, but surprisingly, the fan on it is not obnoxiously loud, which has been my complaint with those 1U power supplies in the past.
That was, I think, the most exciting thing for me is it's a really nice power supply, right? Because it's something we've, you know, more often than not, when we've seen a power supply included with the case, it's crap. But it's an 80 plus gold power supply, and you said it was really quiet.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like super quiet, but for a 40 millimeter fan, which are those really, really tiny ones. They normally just sound like a weed eater. This one was drastically more quiet than anything we had used before. This case also fits a full-size graphics card, up to 11 inches, maybe 10 and a half inches. I'm trying to remember what it is. Obviously, EVGA would love for you to fill it with an EVGA graphics card, but you don't have to do that. It'll support a dual-slot graphics card in there. Make sure you check height and length dimensions to be extra sure. But, you know, you should be able to fit a 290X in here if you wanted to do that, or a 290. I like the fact that the face of it is very clean. It's a high-gloss black front. And they have an optical drive, but it's on the side, and it's a slot-loading optical drive. So the benefit of that is, at least in my opinion, I like having a very clean, kind of almost featureless front to the case. It's only got a power button and a power LED on it. Everything else is off to the side, like your USB ports, your audio ports, that type of thing. So it's a pretty neat design. If you've built a system inside a mini ITX case before, you know that they're a pain. And this is still definitely the case here. Like, there are still routing cables and getting your power connections are a pain. Sometimes you have to, you know, if you've never built in that particular case before, you know, like for me, it was, well, I had the graphics card installed and then I was trying to run the power cables along. Like, nope, you really can't do that. So you take the graphics card out, you run your ATX motherboard power connectors, you get your graphics card power connectors kind of like up just to where they're going to be right before you install the card. And you kind of have to like angle it in to get it all in the right way. And that's just, you know, it's unfortunately par for the course as it is for these mini ITX designs. But, you know, if you want a small space for your computer, then you're going to have, you know, some sacrifices you have to make in that. So it's not a cheap case. It's $179, but it does come with the power supply. So that's kind of an advantage. $179 for the case and a 500-watt power supply, which, you know, we put a GTX Titan in there with it. Technically, that is under the recommended wattage recommendation from NVIDIA for like a 780 Ti or a Titan, but we had no problems running it and gaming on it. So it seems like, you know, that's not going to be a problem. Also, I did find it was odd. So you can build a system, if you wanted to do this, with this EVGA Hadron Air case, you can put an EVGA Z87 mini ITX motherboard in there. You can put an EVGA graphics card. You can put an EVGA heatsink. You can put an EVGA slot loading DVD drive all inside this system. So it's like they've kind of quietly been producing a lot of these different components to, you know, kind of have their own EVGA ecosystem of systems or system builders, right? So add your processor, add your memory, add a storage device, and you're off and running. So not cheap, but small, like laptops. Like if you want a small, thin, powerful laptop, you're going to pay more than you would for the same performance in a larger form factor. Same thing with mini ITX for the most part. If you want small, high performance, you're going to pay a little bit more for bigger, same performance. But I liked it overall. It's good. It's a good case.
Good case. 290X is in stock around the internet. 270X is in stock around the internet. And before you talk about the Sapphire R9 290X Tri-X 4GB graphics card review, I have to ask, which is something, of course, we closed our last episode of 2013 with, the fastest, the latest GPU of 2013, which also turned out to be the final and fastest GPU of 2013, twice in one show. You know, what's the fastest GPU you can buy right now?
The kind of interesting part to that same is that which can you buy right now? So like the fastest, I have now seen the Asus and the Sapphire custom cooled R9 290X cards, and they're awesome. Like they are incredibly fast. They run dramatically cooler, dramatically quieter than the reference designs, and there's no variable, there's no super highly variable clock speed on the GPU either, because the cooler, like the Asus and the Sapphire keep their GPUs between 75 and 80 C consistently while gaming over a long period of time, while the reference cooler was at 95 C. So that's a huge difference there. The problem is Asus, when we did the review, they said their direct CU2 model isn't going to be available until the middle of January. And Sapphire said, well, we may have some the last week of December. And if you look on Newegg, you can see that there is a like a listing for it, but it's out of stock, and I don't know if it actually ever was in stock or if they just kind of had a listing for it. So it's still, as of January 2nd, incredibly difficult to find a 290X in stock. And when you do find a 290X, they are overpriced. They are the prices are still being jacked up from the Litecoin mining, right.
It's phenomenal. Newegg has a cap right now. You can buy two 290Xs at $630 each. You are limited to two per customer, which I'm sure really stops Bitcoin miners.
The problem is at $629, that's $70 over the expected price for these cards, right? So I don't think AMD is getting that extra money. I think Newegg's getting that extra money. So they're kind of jacking up the price. I mean, that's how supply and demand works. Until they start piling these up in their warehouse and they want to start getting rid of them, they'll lower the price down. Amazon is actually worse. If you try looking at Amazon, their pricing is going to be a little bit higher and a much less consistent than what Newegg has. It's really a shame that both the 290, the 290X, the 280X even is really hard to find. It's $100 over its expected MSRP. So I would say that like the Sapphire Tri-X and the Asus DirectCU2 290X cards are like the fastest cards right now, but you can't buy them. So by default, that kind of makes it the GTX 780 Ti from NVIDIA. Which is it's a really weird debate to have. We had this discussion last night about what do we consider the best graphics card of the year, and how much do you weigh these pricing issues and availability issues versus like kind of the overall acceptance of that part. So,
It's funny. It's also because like Titans are selling for almost $1,200, $1,300 right now.
That's still nuts.
Yeah, I mean, with GPUs, we expect it launches at $999, but it'll go down over time, but.
Yeah. GTX Titan, especially now with the 780 Ti out, is just going after a different audience, right? No gamer should buy a Titan. Like, if you're a gamer, you should not be buying a Titan card at all. You should only be buying a Titan if you somehow need the 6 gigs of memory and you need the double precision compute performance and you don't want to buy a Tesla card, right? Because you're going to save a lot of money. That makes a whole lot of sense. Actually, as I look on Newegg, I don't even see any Titans in stock anymore.
There are none. I can't find a single listing on Newegg. I found like one listing on Amazon and it was $1,280.
Yeah, it would make sense to me at this point that NVIDIA is kind of end-of-lifing that because there's no point in having it out. It was a way to take an existing GPU and make a gaming card out of it. But now that they had to undercut themselves with the 780 Ti, there's no point in having it. All they're doing is taking away people who would be buying Tesla or Quadro cards and buying the Titan instead. So to me, it makes sense that the Titan just will slowly fall off. It's a part that doesn't really have a home anymore. But, I'm fine with that because as long as the 780 Ti exists, for those enthusiasts and those gamers at $699, you're getting a better performing part for $300 less than what that sticker price was.
Well, let's talk about now that we sort of deflated the 290X as the card you want but can't buy if you're spending all the money. Sapphire Radeon R9 290X Tri-X. Essentially, this is one of the follow-ups to the Asus R9 290X DirectCU2 in that it is a 290X with a significantly, or we hope, right, going into the review, significantly improved graphics. It's cooler.
Yeah, it is a better cooler. It's quieter. It's overclocked a little bit. Instead of 1,000 megahertz, it's 1,040, but it keeps that speed,
right,
which is the most important part, right? So I said it a couple of weeks ago with the Asus card. I'll just mention it here again. The reference cooler designs say up to 1,000 megahertz, but the average clock speed of the retail card that I have was 869. That's bad. And that's running Metro Last Light at 2560 by 1440 for about 30 minutes, right? So that's over the entire 30-minute period. With the Sapphire card and the Asus card before it, with these custom coolers, the non-reference coolers, it's averaging 1,039.46, which is pretty damn close to 1,040, which is what it's spec'd at, right? So you're actually getting the rated performance, which you were not getting with the reference cards. In my opinion, the Asus and the Sapphire custom cards make the 290 and the 290X a sellable part. Like, had AMD launched with this type of cooler, then I don't know. Like, it totally changes the way everything is, the way the graphic card lineup is. I'm going back in my head. Is it, had AMD Hawaii, their GPUs, launched with a cooler that kept it at 85C instead of 95, and was able to maintain that 1,000 megahertz the whole time, and we didn't have this clock variability issue, like, how much better would the launch have gone for them? I guess I don't understand how that happened. It's a different bridge we've already crossed, but these retail cards are making what AMD did at launch seem kind of foolish. But at the end of the day, as long as AMD sells GPUs, that's what they're interested in. So if they sell them with these custom designs, I'm sure they're okay with that.
Oh my goodness. But yeah, gold rating for the gold.
Yeah. Rating. Yeah. You know, it's tough when you first start to get those cards in, like, because we want to reward these companies that come up with the good designs, the better coolers, they're quiet, they overclock well. Until we see a half a dozen cards, it's hard to pick the very best one. So I kind of default to like gold or silver if it's a really good part. And then we'll save that editor's choice award for when we kind of make that kind of conclusionary assessment at the end of essentially what will be a drawn out roundup of products, but a very, very good card, along with the Asus DirectCU 2. So both good options if you can find it.
You did the $50 IKEA standing desk mod. And for those of us who are office bound and sitting on our asses, there was about a year ago, year and a half ago, there was this big hoopla online. Somebody did an infographics chart basically explaining the 333,000 reasons why sitting and typing all day was going to kill you. You were going to be fatter. You're going to be slower. Your brain is going to atrophy. You know, the people who love you will leave you. You will probably have less money in your bank account. The sky will be darker. I exaggerate extensively, but the reality is the human body just isn't engineered to sit on its ass all day. It doesn't do it very well.
Right.
We had a whole bunch. Actually, we still have a whole bunch of people using standing desks in the office. How are you liking the standing desk style?
So I have now, I would say I've only been using it for full office days. This would be my third day, I guess. And I would say like after, so here's the problem. So the mod that I built is basically an IKEA table, like coffee table, that you put a shelf on and you put it on top of your existing desk. So one, it's not adjustable height. Which means you need to measure and be careful what you're measuring, like what height the keyboard tray is going to be at and stuff like that. Also, because it's not easily adjustable, like if you want to adjust the version that I made, you have to, you know, take the monitors off. Well, I'm talking about like if you want to convert it back to a sitting desk, you have to like carefully move my two monitors off of the coffee table back onto the regular desk, move the keyboard, move the mouse, find a place to put this coffee table that sits on top of my desk. So my understanding is that you're supposed to kind of work your way into it, you know, like 2 hours sitting, 2 hours standing, 2 hours sitting, 2 hours standing, kind of back and forth. And I didn't really do that. I have kind of jumped all the way in, both feet standing all the time. And so like the first day after standing at it, my lower back it hurt a lot. It was pretty sore. I have lower back issues anyway. So, I bought a mat to stand on and, you know, things like that. So it helps. And I think it's better the third day than it was after the first day. Although I'm debating whether or not it was a good idea to start this little experiment before CES versus after CES. I'm not, you know, I don't know if I'm either doing a good thing by getting my back ready for standing and walking all day, mm-hmm. or a bad thing for not giving it the necessary amount of rest before 5 days in standing and walking. So I'll have to tell you after or during the show. But it's a pretty cool little mod for $50 if you want to try it out and not spend a whole lot of money on the kind of pre-built desk options, right? You know, you're talking about a $20 coffee table, a $15 shelf, and two $4 brackets. And then you need like $5 worth of hardware from a Home Depot or something like that to bolt it all together. And it works okay.
I usually find myself alternating between sitting and standing so that I'll stand for a while, sit for a while. You know, it's funny. I mean, are you doing any sort of exercise program or seeing a chiropractor for your lower back pain?
No, I never was. I was too young and stubborn to do anything like that. That would be smart.
Now you're old and smart.
but now, you would think that, wouldn't you? You would think that. I think I've been taking, you know, 10 or 15 minute breaks every once in a while. The chair still sits behind me, you know, kind of in the corner, right? So whenever I need to take a call on my cell phone or something like that, or I'm just listening to some audio, I can sit down there for a little bit. I don't know if it's just the mindset of I want to prove that this was a good idea, but I feel like I'm a little bit more productive when I'm standing there and like even typing and writing, you know, I don't know what it is.
I mean, it's funny. The stats are there for a standing desk, and the idea that there's a verifiable, people have done, you know, and it's funny. It's like it's hard science. It's not hard science, but the idea is that you should be more productive at a standing desk. You know, I've seen the stats for it. You know, it's not like they were being paid for by a desk company that put it together. There's large corporations exploring this because they're always looking for ways to make knowledge workers more productive. So it's an interesting idea that you may be more efficient doing this. It's certainly healthier for you if you can make it work for you. We did some reviews on Techzilla. One of the more affordable ones, it's easy to adjust, is the up desk. We did the up desk upright, which is like covered with a whiteboard. The whiteboard's kind of a gimmick aspect of it, but it was amazing, like just the idea that you could have a really super stable motorized desk that would support everything. And it's also really crazy, a company called Stirworks, I got to look at one of their products at a press demo, and it's insane, right? It's made in Brooklyn, it's domestically made, and they've built a lot of technology into it where it will actually, you can program it to alternate between sitting and standing automatically, and it does this really interesting thing where the desk breathes. So you'll be working for a while and then it'll kind of sigh, and then, you know, you can either like lock it in place or, you know, that's its way of saying, hey, it's time to change.
It's alerting. Position. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. And it's an interesting, it's funny, right? Cause you know, who would have ever thought, you know, a phone would take over most of the computing in your life,
right,
or replace your GPS and your camera and your phone. And it's where your web browse but the idea of it always strikes me as really fascinating when a bunch of engineers who actually have some aesthetics get together and really try to challenge the paradigm. It's also, the Stirworks desk is like $5,000, which is more money than I will ever pay for a desk, I think. It's more money than I paid for my truck, but there's some interesting stuff out there. It's worth researching, and it's definitely...
Yeah.
If you spend a lot of time, and I also got to say, like working with your form, your keyboard location, footrests, people really ignore ergonometrics when they're using their computers until it's far, far too late and they've done a lot of damage. Mm-hmm. So, you know, don't be like Ryan.
don't be like me, don't. But if you want to try it, like, so that up desk in the size that I would want is like $950. This was $50 and you had to like use a drill, right? So it might be worth a shot. And you can actually get it for like 25. You can get it for half that price if you have one monitor. You can just use like the standard IKEA LAC table instead of the LAC coffee table that I used. So I don't know. It took maybe an hour cheap. To put together. Yeah, exactly.
Experiment cheap, and if it's something you're actually going to use, and you could either have something custom built or build something yourself or buy one of the pre-made ones. What's going on with AMD Mantlefield for Battlefield 4? It's been delayed, like permanently or temporarily?
No, not permanently, at least according to what they're saying. So Mantle is that new API that AMD introduced with the Hawaii GPU. It's a low-level API. It's not going through DirectX or OpenGL. It speaks directly to the AMD GCN graphics architectures. And Battlefield 4 was going to be the first game to implement it. It was supposed to be a patch that was coming out in December. If you follow Battlefield 4 at all, you'll know that Battlefield 4 has an entirely different set of problems to address. In particular, it's stability and feature issues, not just on the PC platform, but on all the console platforms too. So basically on December 30th, AMD said, hey, by the way, we are announcing that this is going to be delayed into January. And January is their target date for it. And then some of us were on the podcast last night having a debate on how likely it is that you'll see it in January. And I think if you, I think seeing it in January would probably be pretty wishful thinking at this point. But if it does, great. But it's not canceled or anything like that. It's just being delayed a little bit. It's unfortunate for AMD because this is, you know, they're really trying to get this feather in the cap again, you know, as, you know, NVIDIA continues to have things like G-Sync and GeForce Experience and Twitch streaming and all that other kind of stuff. AMD was really was banking a lot on getting Mantle up and running and showcasing it and people using it and testing it. But, you know, this it'll be huge when it launches for Battlefield 4 still, but it's unfortunately going to be a little bit later than we might have expected. So
that's pretty reasonable.
Sometime after CES. And when I see them at CES, I will ask for more detail and they will say sometime in January. That will be the only answer I get. So
at least it's consistent, right?
Yeah.
One more mini ITX case. Maybe 2014 is finally the year of mini ITX, but the Steam Machine chassis from Raven, the ZRV701, which is a long name for a relatively small case.
I'm not sure what, I think it's supposed to be called the Raven Z.
Sorry.
and then like the model numbers, the RVZ01, I couldn't really decide, so I just put them both in the title. It was maybe a little bit overkill. So this is like a mini ITX case that goes into the form factor of like, hey, we're going to be a home theater style type design, right? So it's about
it looks like a console.
it's about the same size as an Xbox One. It's a little bit longer and taller than an Xbox One, but it's very similar in size to an Xbox One. And it has a unique styling that I like. We've had some people comment that they don't like it. Some people are kind of not fans of the overly kind of plastic look that some of these cases tend to get, which is a fair assessment. Again, it's just a personal preference, really. But what's interesting about this is that it is a small case. It's a low form, a low profile style design, but you can still fit in a full length graphics card. They claim you can still fit in water cooling, although I think that's going to be a pretty big stretch. If you look at some of the pictures of the Steam machines that Valve sent out in this Raven case, there's a lot of similarities in this. It's mini ITX, so you're going to look at a mini ITX motherboard again. It has like a the graphics card runs parallel to the motherboard, so you have a right angle PCI Express adapter. It's pretty cool how the entire there's a section of the internals that comes out that holds your graphics card, your optical drive, your hard drive, or your SSD rather, and this whole chunk comes out. You install the graphics card in it, you install the SSD in it, you install the optical drive in it, and then you kind of plop it down into the case. You know, obviously lining up that PCI Express slot and connect the power and you're kind of good to go. It's a really, really neat case. And they're saying it's only going to be like $100. Now, that doesn't include a power supply like the EVGA one did. So you'll have to factor that in. And it does use the SFX format of power supply, which is... It's neat, but it's unfortunate because the SFX is a proprietary form factor from Silverstone. It's like a half depth design. It's kind of like ATX, but it's half the size essentially. And you can get up to 450 watt power supply in that today. But I have a feeling they're going to announce another model or two at CES next week for higher capacities on that. Which will be good. You know, it's Silverstone kind of presented us this case and I said, hey, well, I don't have the power supply. Do you have some accessories you can send along with it so we can, you know, showcase what this case can do? And so they send along that 450 watt SFX power supply. Then they shipped with it a accessory cable kit with it. If you look at the picture of the cables on the power supply, they're actually specifically designed short cables and flat power supply cables so that they're easy to route throughout the case. That really adds a lot to the ability to install, you know, inside these tiny cases. They also included a really high performance heatsink for the processor, which it's impressive that it can fit inside the case, But the problem is installing that particular heatsink was a huge pain because of the cramped spacing. You know, I have generally been of the mindset of I like the cases that are larger because my hands and face have room to get in there and actually see what's going on and work on stuff. When you have these tiny designs, it's really difficult to, you know, have a heat sink. Like if you go to the second page of that and you scroll all the way down to like there's one where there's the heat sink is sitting over top of the motherboard. It's a mini ITX motherboard with this heat sink that almost completely covers the top of it, which is cool. It's high performance. You'll be able to overclock and, you know, do some stuff that you might not be able to do in other mini ITX cases. But yeah, there's that shot there. It's like if you say, oh man, I forgot to plug in anything on the board, you've got to take that heatsink back off. There's no chance of that. Routing cables around it after the fact was very much a pain in the butt. So there's a lot to like about it. Again, it's relatively inexpensive, $100. And you could probably put that on a shelf above your Xbox One and it would fit in pretty well. You know, if you wanted to build a SteamOS machine out of it or dual boot a Windows and SteamOS machine on it, you know, I think that would be a pretty good option.
Be interesting to see. Something we were talking earlier a bunch about CES, what we expect, what we see, what we're excited about. You know, of course, there will be new cell phone designs, new tablets. GigaOhm's actually reporting today that it's funny, the title is YouTube Goes 4K, Google signs up long list of hardware partners for VP9 support. And it's kind of interesting, right? Because YouTube's been experimenting with 4K for years now. The running joke is one of the only places to get 4K content was off of YouTube. But what's kind of interesting is H.265 Broadcom, the chip manufacturer, they're essentially doing, I'm going to use a marketing phrase here, end-to-end solutions for H.265, which is the new video codec that's paired with 4K video, because essentially H.264 isn't enough to compress 4K video in a way that's going to function over most cable systems, right? So the idea is that you can now pack with H.265 compression, you can now pack 4K video into the same space as a 1080p or four 1080p channels in the same space as a 1080p channel. Now, that's a really huge jump in compression technology. Google, of course, has been working on their open source VP8 project, and they said they'll be demonstrating 4K video at CES with VP9. And it's interesting, they'll be streaming 4K in LG, Panasonic, Sony, and apparently a pretty big list of hardware partners, apparently 19 hardware partners, including ARM, Intel, Broadcom, and Marvell. Samsung, Sharp, Toshiba. And it's also really, really, really interesting. And I'm going to read a quote from Francisco Varela, the global director of platform partnerships at YouTube. Quote, this certainly isn't a war of the video codecs and that YouTube could add H.265 support. So I think it's interesting the idea that, A, that Google is continuing to try to evolve their open source codec to, you know, essentially make 4K feasible. With our given restraints on bandwidth, both for cable companies and satellite companies and streaming over the interwebs, but also that they are also smart enough, and it's Google, but it's not like they're stupid, but they're going to be looking at 8.265 as a possibility, which gives me hope that there may be some 4K announcements on the content side, not that there are a lot of 4K options in terms of actually sourced content, but that's a whole rat hole I'm not going to go down on. I'll save that for HD Nation and not try to drag the podcast into oblivion on that. Yeah, and it's going to be interesting. I think we're going to see, you know, we're finally going to see 60 hertz 4K monitors coming out. It's probably in volume. We'll see a bunch of the new models at CES. And then I'm hoping we finally see some more 4K desktop monitors, because for me, that's the real killer application for 4K. Have you given back that Asus monitor yet? It wasn't Asus, right?
Nope. Yep. Nope. Nope, nobody flew out here to steal it from me, so that's their problem, I guess. Yeah, I hope I see more of that too. And MST monitors, the ones that are multi-stream, are fine as long as, you know, you're using a DisplayPort connection and the updated version of the VESA standard that kind of auto negotiates which side is left and which side is right. For the graphics card would be a big boon towards usability of that particular design. Otherwise, DisplayPort will support single cable, like HDMI 2.0 will support single cable 60 hertz. And then we can start looking forward to 4K 120 hertz and beyond and all that other kind of stuff too. But I would like to see, you know, if somebody said, hey, here's a 4K 60 hertz panel, MST or HDMI, and it's going to be out in June, and our goal is $1,200 to $1,500, that would be awesome. I don't know if that will happen, but that would be fantastic. I'd be for it. I'd be okay with that, I guess, is what I'm saying.
It would be acceptable to you.
Yeah.
Twitch, TWICH at twit.tv is the email address. We love your questions, and that's why we answer them. You can also hit us at Ryan Schrout or at Patrick Norton on the Twitters. Joe has a question about memory technology. He says, hey, guys, I was wondering if you could talk a little about future RAM tech and when we will see it, specifically what we might see DDR4 paired with Intel AMD processors and what's next on the horizon for GDDR. How much higher can GDDR5 clock, and where is GDDR6 in terms of development? I'm assuming there is such a thing. And hey, if you want to use GDDR5 for general computing purposes right now, go buy a PlayStation 4 and then browse the web with it.
Yeah, there you go. And then you can see how much faster YouTube videos load because of it.
You
DDR4,
mock,
but I do mock. DDR4 will be paired with Intel processors this year, 2014. It'll be the end of the year. It'll be the next E derivative, Haswell E, when it comes out. I think it will be the end of this year that will have DDR4. I think it will be just like other, you know, kind of DDR revision transitions that we've had, where, you know, the first iteration of DDR3 was a lower frequency and higher cache latency than we would have liked. And because of that, the highest in DDR2 memory was actually faster than the launching DDR3. I think that same pattern will repeat. It happened with DDR1, 2, and 3. And so DDR4 will just be kind of a tick box feature for its first iteration until we start to see, you know, frequencies clock up, more manufacturers, foundry places actually producing it, and thus, you know, decreasing the price, that kind of thing. But I don't think we'll see it on any AMD parts in 2014, actually.
But back in 2012, they told us that AMD was going to release GDDR6 in 2014. So
did they?
I've seen a bunch of. I was doing some research. Double check. It's funny because I had forgotten that GDDR is essentially an AMD spec originally.
GDDR?
Yeah.
I don't know if I don't know. Maybe that's the case. I don't really know. I mean, GDDR is graphics DDR. It's just kind of like a specific iteration of it. I think it's still part of a JEDEC standard. Maybe AMD was kind of the progenitor of it. But that's
probably a better way of saying it.
As for like how much higher can GDDR5 go and when GDDR6 is, I honestly don't know. I think GDDR5, we're hitting, you know, some graphics cards release with stock settings at 7 gigahertz on it. And we've seen overclocks 7,500, you know, pretty easily. We're probably reaching the edge of that. And because of the flexibility that GPUs offer, the raw memory frequency matters less than the memory bandwidth that you can get. So the fact that you can have like the R9290X is a 512-bit memory bus on a GDDR5 interface, and it's only running at 5.5 gigahertz, but it still has a huge amount of memory bandwidth because it has a extra wide memory bus. So the fact that AMD was able to get more than enough memory bandwidth that it needed for its highest-end GPU, mm-hmm. while actually running the memory frequency lower than it did with its previous generation GPU, says that, you know, that it's not really that we need DDR6 for anything like that or higher frequencies. We just need to make sure that for the type of architecture GPU is, as long as it's being fed enough data in a timely manner, it'll be fine. So it's more of a bandwidth issue as opposed to a particular frequency issue. Obviously, frequency is part of that equation, but it has the capability, right? So we have GPUs that have 128-bit memory interfaces, 256, 384, and 512. So depending on how much bandwidth that GPU actually needs to run efficiently, you know, you can kind of play with the parameters as they see fit.
And I mean, it's just a huge amount of bandwidth. I mean, it's funny, if you look at the Wikipedia article on SDRAM, it's amusing because there's a whole section on failed successors, which would include RAMBUS, synchronous like DRAM, and one I'd never actually heard of before, which is virtual channel memory SDRAM, which has come up by NEC that they kind of opened as a standard. I don't think I've ever even seen any device that used virtual channel.
I don't think so either.
But it's yeah, I you're right. 2014, not going to happen. But we can dream.
Sure.
I don't know. Waiting for Intel to integrate, you know, digital hard drives directly into the chipset, or AMD.
Yeah.
That'd be really awesome. That'd be
absolutely
really fast. All we need is more dense memory, more better, denser memory. That sounded sophisticated. So let's go to an email from Ryan about Mantle versus G-Sync before I sound even less sophisticated than usual. Technologies abound. Hi, guys. Wanted your opinions on the two new technologies coming to video cards this year, those being AMD Mantle and NVIDIA G-Sync. Both sound great, but at this point in time, locked to their respective companies. Which do you think will have the greater impact on PC gaming this 2014 year? I currently roll with a dual X-Fire 7970 gigahertz edition card set and have been an AMD user my whole self-built PC life. However, I like both techs, and I wish I could have both sad face. And then we have a sad face emoticon. I don't think either of them are going to have a huge impact on PC gaming this year, because the vast majority of PC gamers will not have GPUs that will take advantage of either technology. And until more gamers have cards that will take advantage of the exciting new technology, most video games won't do a whole lot with them. Counterpoint,
well,
Mr.
Stout. You're kind of right there. So Mantle will work on 7,000 series GPUs, actually. Anything that's GCN based. Its bottleneck is more, will there be game developers that actually integrate it? And I think beyond EA and DICE kind of putting it in Frostbite, and now we have this first delay of it in Frostbite, I don't think we'll see much more than that in there. We honestly don't even know what the performance benefits of Mantle will be for the gamer. We have some rough estimates on how it will improve draw call performance. Right. But what, at the end of the day, what does that actually mean for me as I sit down to play my game in DirectX, or do I want to play it in the Mantle revision? Right. And so that to me is like the biggest question mark with Mantle. Yes, it may be great, but if it's more work for the developer, are they going to be willing to spend that time to build a Mantle version of it, or to really focus on it and optimize for it or something like that? So Mantle has a lot of a high ceiling. But it has a very low floor. It could turn out to be nothing in 2014, or it could turn out to be very, very compelling. G-Sync, I think, is a little bit different in that it has a little bit lower ceiling for how it will improve people, because it requires people to buy new displays, which is tough to do. And then obviously you have the limitation of you have to have an NVIDIA Kepler or higher graphics card. But you have the same limitation with Mantle. You have to have an AMD GCN or higher graphics card. But G-Sync has a higher floor, meaning that it already works and it already does really cool stuff. It already works really well. So if, you know, we had that contest over the last couple of weeks over the holiday where we gave away five of those G-Sync DIY kits, and we already have two people who have received the ones that we sent out that have installed them and they've been using them and have very, very positive reactions to them and very good experiences with them after getting through the initial install and DIY upgrade part of it. So I think both will have pretty limited success in the overall market in 2014 because they're proprietary to that particular vendor. But I think if you can, the benefit that, I'm going off too long with this, but the benefit of Mantle is that if somebody can say, if I can look at it and benchmark and test and say, look, you're going to get X percentage better performance if you have an AMD card running the Mantle version of Battlefield 4 than if you're running the DirectX version of Battlefield 4. That is a tangible benefit that anybody can understand from reading an article and looking at a graph. The problem for G-Sync is that I can say how awesome it looks, but until you actually see it in person, it's really hard to kind of understand and grasp how much that can affect your gaming performance, your gaming experience, rather. So I think it will depend on what we see at CES this week. If we go to NVIDIA's booth and they have like three monitors with G-Sync support or something like that, that they're showing off, look at the industry support. We have three displays. That's going to be a bad sign for the year. If we go to their booth and we see a dozen displays and we see some 1080p, maybe we see some 25 by 14 and we see not just TN, but we see IPS, then I start to lean towards the side of G-Sync being impactful and maybe even driving, you know, AMD to have to force its hand and copy it or do something very similar, at least.
That, I think, actually was not going on too long. I think you made the point completely. Okay. I don't know. It's you know, I have one more thing to be excited about at CES this year.
From what I've been told in secret little whispers is that there will be some pretty cool G-Sync stuff to be shown off. I don't know. Like, I would love to see that, like a 30-inch 25 by 16 or 25 by 14 or whatever panel running it with like 120 hertz refresh. Like, that would be awesome. And have it be a good quality kind of IPS display. Like, that would be perfect. As long as it's not $1,000 or something, then that would be awesome. And I think if enough people, obviously NVIDIA's goal is to get as many people at CES to see it in person so that they can discuss or they can replay the experience to their readers or to their viewers or listeners or whatever it is, because it's one of those things you have to see to experience, and you don't really have a way to describe it very well otherwise. So we'll see. Definitely stop by there if you're in the area.
Oh, I'll be there. I'm still looking forward to the NVIDIA announcements on Sunday night. That'll be pretty exciting. We got an email from B about replacing parts in an old machine. He says, I have an iBuyPower Gamer N30NX I bought in 2007. It ate its second motherboard last month. It was working just fine for my gaming needs, World of Warcraft, EVE Online, StarCraft II, clone campaigns. Do I buy another used Asus P5N ESLi mainboard or try a different solution? You know, the first thing I want to say is A, you know, why did your motherboard die? And B, why did the second motherboard die? And C, how old is your power supply? Do you have a surge protector or a UPS kind of, you know, between your power supply and your motherboard, kind of protecting your motherboard? If you've been running air conditioners or plugged any new and exciting weird hardware that has a heavy power draw, or hardware appliances that have a heavy power draw into your home electrical system. Because it's having a motherboard die in 2 months is really, really frustrating, especially after you've had your first one for like 6 years. One, I would probably say don't buy a used motherboard unless you know the person it's coming from. Just because motherboards, in theory, nothing on the motherboard should die, right? Because electronics, if they're kept, you know, if electronics are kept dry and cool, they will pretty much run forever. Or I should say dry and cool and fed an excellent source of power. So I would probably say, you know, just to be devil's advocate, I would probably go for another motherboard. There's a lot of options still out there for the LGA 775s. Supermicro has got some boards that are really well reviewed on Newegg. Intel's pretty much always rock solid on their quality control. I would probably also, if I was going to go spend a bunch of money on a new motherboard, I would probably want to spend some money and get a new power supply. Because so many problems we run into hard drives and motherboards actually turn out to be problems with the power supply feeding the voltage to the motherboard and hard drive. And that's just a good rule of thumb, period. Spend more money than you think you should in your power supply, and you'll probably have fewer problems with your system over its life. I would also say, you know, if you don't have a surge protector on that system or if you don't have a UPS on that system, get one when you get your new power supply and your new motherboard. You know, and also I'd probably say, you know, even for World of Warcraft or Eve, it's probably time to start thinking about when you're going to want to upgrade that motherboard.
You're gonna have to do the whole system.
Yeah. And that's gonna get expensive, so I can totally understand wanting to put that off indefinitely. But you know, if you go through a third motherboard, you're going to be really frustrated because at that point you pretty much are closing in on a $500 PC build from the PC per leaderboard, and you're going to be really irked because then you could have had a much newer, much faster PC with all fresh parts, you know, instead of a pile of dead motherboards on a 6-year-old processor closing in on a 7-year-old.
I mean it's the Core 2 Quad Q6600. It was a great part at the time. 2 gigs DDR2 memory. 2 320 gig hard drives in RAID, 2 GeForce 8600 GTs in SLI. Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean it's getting long in the tooth. I don't know much about that specific motherboard. I can't remember that much about that specific motherboard. I'm trying to remember. I guess I don't. It says it has Windows Vista Home Premium on it, but I'm gonna guess he's upgraded his operating system since then. I guess I don't know how likely it is if he uses a different motherboard. If he's trying to do this without reinstalling his operating system, if that will cause an issue. But if he's going to reinstall his OS anyway and kind of get a fresh running start on it, then yeah, I think maybe selecting a different board might be a good option. So
yeah.
And good for you though, for getting that much life out of that system. You know, I mean, that's awesome.
That's an awesome return on investment. One more email before we go.
Sure.
It's about Shield. It's a good one leading up to CES and our contemplation of what NVIDIA will announce. Zach says he's been listening to the show for a good while now, and I enjoy it every week. Thank you, Zach. Because of you, I found a 2560 by 1440 gaming, and so is my girlfriend. So much for my second Shimeon. Mm-hmm. She's running a 560 Ti, and I will say this one statement. If your video card is better than a 560 Ti and are gaming in 1080, just stop now. Go buy a monitor that can show the detail the developers intended. And I would agree with that if I could just, you know, stop feeding my children and buy a better monitor. Anyway, for Zach's question, how about that Shield? I play an MMO Guild Wars 2, and it seems like the Shield would be a nice pairing for grinding stuff that doesn't require high resolution or the pinpoint accuracy that my mouse allows. Or does Shield only work on non-Steam games? I could see it being a nice way to craft, play the trading post, or wait for a queue to get into WVW while spending quality time with the family. Evil grin. How does the transition go when going back to the computer? Thanks for the great show, Zach. And it's funny, I've actually spent all of my time with the Shield just playing games on the Shield.
Android games?
Yeah. And it's funny, I mean, in theory, you know, Zach, you pretty much nailed it. You are kind of the ideal customer for this because mm-hmm. you're not expecting full-on world-class, you know, first-person shooter gaming performance on a little handheld device that you're streaming to. You're doing stuff that's going to be relatively low maintenance in terms of graphics. You know, can he seamlessly transfer between the device and the computer and back and forth, or is it a clunky situation?
So if it's not an officially supported game on PC streaming, you can still run it, but it's a little bit clunkier because you have to, use the virtual mouse that is a thumbstick. Right, and kind of click things around until you get into the game. As long as if the game has controller support, it should support the controller once you are in the game. It's kind of that launching of the game process that can be a little bit of a pain if it's not, you know, kind of well integrated into the NVIDIA Shield app, like the PC streaming app. So you know, switching back and forth would be a little bit of a pain there. Although it's going to differ per game. So I really hate to say if it's going to work really well or really poorly with Guild Wars 2. I don't know. But if it has controller support, it will, once you're in the game, it will work. It should just work fine. Yeah. I mean, you obviously, if you can, see if you can find other people that have a Shield already and have tried Guild Wars 2. It'd be a good idea to see what their experiences are, if that's like the specific thing you are looking for. So yeah, actually there's a thread on it in on the Guild Wars 2 forum, actually, but not a whole lot of responses there yet. So, but it looks like, yeah, I mean, what you do is you add, so in Steam, you can add a non-Steam game to your Steam library, right? So it'll just, it'll be like the launcher for it, and that will help do the launching process as well. So there will be ways to get it to work. But you are right, Patrick, in that he is kind of, he's hit on one of the ideal usage scenarios of Shield as both a kind of portable Android gaming device and as a PC streaming device. It's like, hey, I've got this thing. I want to do this. It doesn't require my undivided attention. It doesn't really need for me to be in front of a large screen. It's something that is fun, but, you know, kind of in repetitive nature as some of those tasks and MMOs can be. And I think that would work out pretty okay, actually. So.
Plus, you could pretend you're spending quality time with your family while secretly left.
I don't know how big of a secret that is when you've still, it's still a device you're holding there. I think maybe I've tried that once before and it didn't go over well, like a PSP or something. So if he figures that out, he should email back and tell me that secret. So,
honey, I'm going to spend some quality time with the boy. Hand the boy the iPad. You have your Shield, and you go have your quality time.
Okay.
Just pray she doesn't walk into the room. That's all I'm saying. Yeah. Pray she doesn't walk into the room. Oh, my goodness. CES, people, I'm going to be there with Techzilla and AC Nation. Mr. Shrout is going to be there with PC Per. We're going to be generating a metric ton of stories to use a highly sophisticated media analysis term. And that is it for our first episode of This Week Computer Hardware for the new and exciting year of 2014. New episodes come out each and every week, and you can find them all at twit.tv/Twitch, where you can also subscribe to make sure the podcast gets delivered to you. And as we mentioned earlier, you can tweet at Ryan Shrout or at Patrick Norton if you want to get personal with us or fire out a question or email us, twych@twit.tv. We want to thank everybody for listening. We want to thank the chat room for joining in and keeping us honest. And we want to thank you, each and every one of you, for listening to the show. Patrick Norton.
I'm Ryan Shrout.
We'll see you next week on Twitch. Twitch from CES. Oh, my goodness. Can we make it happen?